Okay, before I tell you what I'm going to speak about, I want to give you a preface so it makes sense. Even though Shavuos is only one day Yontif, just like Pesach is 7 days, and Sukkot is 8 days, and there are sacrifices that you're supposed to bring on the first day of Pesach and the first day of Sukkot, and if you didn't bring those sacrifices on the first day, you have all 7 days to make up for the sacrifice. The Gemara says that Shavuos is similar. Even though the holiday is only one day, but if you didn't bring the sacrifice you're supposed to bring on that day, you have 7 days to make it up. So really, the 7 days after Shavuos are really part of the holiday. And that's why we have the minig, many of the minig, not to say Tachnun, until the 7th day after Shavuos, which would be this Thursday, is the end of those 7 days. So since we're still in the 7 day period from the beginning of Shavuos, it's like we're still celebrating Shavuos. Therefore, I will take the liberty of speaking about Shavuos, not as early for next year, but as part of the celebration of the holiday for this year. And if you find that comical, then we're binyotze competing. Okay. But the idea is a universal idea, not only relegated to Shavuos, and therefore I think it's important to mention. It's a new idea. It's something I know I haven't spoken about here before. So Torah says, the rabbis say, that when the Torah was given, it was so overwhelming that the Jewish people died and they had to be resurrected. And God brought the tau, the dew of the resurrection, and resurrected them. And the Gemara explains that that dew of the resurrection is the Torah itself. The Torah resurrected them. The Torah gave them new life. And the question always bothered me, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu permit them to die and then have to resurrect them? Wouldn't it have been better had he given the power not to die? Instead of letting them die and then having to resurrect them, if he knew that he wanted them to be alive, let them continue living. Give them the power to withstand the tremendous intensity of the giving of the Torah without dying. Why did he let them die and have to resurrect them? We've given other answers to this question in the past. Tonight I want to offer the following. And that is that God wanted them to know that Torah creates a completely different metzios, completely different existence. What a person is before Torah is different than he is after he learns Torah. What the world was like before the Torah was given is not the same world after, and therefore it's like a new person. And the old person died, and a new person was resurrected. That's the lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to know. Torah, you can't remain the same person before Torah and after Torah, and we'll see that that not only applies to the initial giving of the Torah, but it applies on an ongoing basis. Torah is, in fact, life. Ki heim chayenu va'orech yomenu. And Torah gives a person, through its learning and observance, constant new life. And therefore, a person is constantly being renewed, constantly new, situations are new, and every bit of Torah makes a person a new person. And that's what the rabbis mean, one of the ideas. Divrei Torah nimsholim ke'esh. The words of Torah compared to fire. Just like fire makes an impression, so too Torah makes an impression. What impression does fire make? It changes things. It makes soft things hard and hard things soft. That is the process of cooking. Cooking is done through heat. Heat, fire, changes the makeup of things. Torah makes an impression. It changes a person. Similarly, we find that whoever teaches someone else's child Torah, it's as if he gave birth to him. Because teaching somebody Torah makes them a different person. And therefore, if I taught someone else's child Torah, I am involved in making of that person. Because part of that person is made by me, wasn't made by his parents, because teaching someone Torah changes that person. I was thinking that that's the idea of where, when we accepted the Torah, we became a skula mikol ha'amin. A skula is something that is, you can't explain it rationally. It's something different than anything that you can explain. By keeping the Torah, listening to the Torah, learning the Torah, and observing the Torah, we become something different than all the nations of the world. It changes us. Changes us into a different existence, a different commodity. I was thinking maybe that's what it means when we make the bracha on the Torah, the Ha'arev no Hashem Elokeinu as Divrei Sorosu. We make a bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to busy ourselves, toil in Torah, lasso b'divrei Torah. And then we continue, the Ha'arev no Hashem Elokeinu as Divrei Sorosu b'thinu. The simple meaning, I think, if you look in the art scroll or in the any English translation, the Ha'arevna is usually translated to make sweet and pleasant. Arev. Arev means pleasant, sweet. Make the words of Torah pleasant in my mouth. I heard another explanation that Ha'arevna can mean from the Lashon Arev, which means a guarantor. Somebody guarantees something. Somebody is an orev, he is a guarantor on a loan. So make us harev no Hashem Elokeinu, make us feel the responsibility to guarantee the observance of Torah. That's another meaning of the harevna. Now I want to give you a third meaning that fits this idea. The word la'arev can also mean to mix, to mix up, to attach, to irbuv means to mix things together. La'arev, to mix things together. We ask God, ha'arev no Hashem Elokeinu, let the Torah bond with us, mix with our mouth, meaning our neshama. Where is the manifestation of the neshama in speech? The Harev no Hashem Elokeinu as Divrei Soras Chobathinu. Let the words of the Torah mix with our neshama, with our speech, and we should therefore become Yodei Shemecha, people who know your name, but knowledge over here means to connect, attach ourselves to your name. The Lomdei Sorasecha Lishma. Torah has to be something that connects, attaches, that mixes with our very being and makes us a different person. We're not the same person. Let the Torah bond with us. Let us bond with the Torah. That's the idea. I was thinking to explain another thing that we usually learn much differently in a much different light. The Medrash says, Yom HaShishi, Shishi B'Sivan. It says the world was created in 6 days, and on the sixth day, at the end of the sixth day, Yom HaShishi Vayichulu HaShemayim Va'aretz, heaven and earth were finished. So the rabbis comment on the fact that all the other 5 days, it doesn't have the hey, the ha, right? The hey that makes it something special. Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi'i, Yom Chamishi, Yom HaShishi. Why HaShishi? Because it hints to another 6 day. Shishi b'Sivan, the sixth day of Sivan in the future. The Jewish people will accept the Torah, and the world is waiting for that day. If the Jewish people will accept the Torah on that day, then the world will exist. And if not, it'll revert back to tohu vavohu. It'll revert back to void and a null and void world. So we usually understand that as a condition. God made the creation, the existence of the world, conditional on the acceptance of the Torah. If they accept the Torah, fine. If they don't accept the Torah, then retroactively the world will cease to exist. But I want to say it means something different. And that is the following. The Kuzri, Rabbi Yehuda Levi, explains that there are four levels of existence that we are familiar with. There's domain. There is the inanimate objects, mineral world, someach, the vegetable world. Then there is Chai, the animal world, and Chai Hamedaber, and human beings. Those are the four levels of existence. Says the Kuzri, there's a fifth level of existence, and that is a prophet. The Jewish people are different. They're not regular human beings. We are a step above. And the ultimate that a Jew can be is a prophet. That is essentially, right, different than just I'm a human being. It's just like a human being is higher than an animal, right, a different sug, a different kind. So too, the ultimate of what a Jew can reach and be a prophet is essentially in kind different than stam human beings. It's one step up, like from the animal to human beings, from human beings to the Jewish people, and specifically prophets. At Matan Torah, all Jews became prophets at the highest level. We all heard the first two of the Ten Commandments directly from God, the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu heard them. That means that we all experience the same level of prophecy, which is the highest level of prophecy, of Moshe Rabbeinu. So when the Torah was given, the world was really completed. It wasn't completed before that. Until the Torah was given, the world existed on four planes: mineral, vegetable, animal, human. When the Torah was given, it became completed with the fifth level of Jewish people, prophets. And therefore, what God said is, the world is not completed today. Yom HaShishi VaYechulu HaShomayim, the sixth day when the world will really be completed, will be when the Jewish people receive the Torah. And if they don't, then the world basically, compared to what it could be, is null and void. Not that it would become null and void, the world would exist, but compared to the perfection it could have reached, it would be comparatively, relatively, still null and void. Because as there were more things to be perfected, what came before was like tohu vavohu compared to what would be afterwards. So had the Torah, had the world never reached its fifth level, had it remained on the fourth level, it would have been, relatively speaking, tohu vavohu compared to its ultimate potential. That's what it means. And therefore, the world in fact changed after the Torah was given. I think this is an interesting point. I didn't see anybody mention it. I do know that there are those that say almost the opposite. But it seems to be reasonable to tell you what I'm going to tell you now. When the world was created, night came before day. By Maisa Bereishis, Vayehi Erev, Vayehi Voker, night precedes the day. And that's how all of our holidays, Shabbos, night precedes the day. First we start at night, then we go in the daytime. The Torah, however, is always referred to in the opposite order. Im lo brisi yomam v'layla chuko shomayim v'aretz lo samti. If it wouldn't be for my covenant, day and night, day first and then night, which refers to the Torah. It also refers to bris milah, which we'll see is significant too. The bris milah, day and night. V'hagisa bo yomam v'layla. You should meditate on the Torah day and night, not night and day, day and night. Halachically, it's like that. We make a Birchas HaTorah in the morning, and it has effect all the way till the next morning, until you go to sleep. If you didn't go to sleep, you don't make a Birchas HaTorah, right? What's it called? Every day, the day starts daytime, then nighttime. The nighttime follows the daytime for Birchas HaTorah. Why? So I was thinking that when the world was created, this physical world is compared to night, Olam Hazeh, this world. And the next world is compared to day. So first comes the night, and then comes the day. First comes this world, then comes the Olam Haba, which is compared to day. The Torah, however, transforms this world into a little bit of Olam Haba. The Torah gives a person a chance to attach himself to God and have a closeness with God even in this world. So the Olam Haba already comes, it changes the night of this world into day. And therefore, the night becomes secondary. This world becomes secondary to the world to come because you already have a preview, a preface to Olam Haba in this world too. So therefore, the order is changing. We find that in another place, where the night follows the day by sacrifices. Same idea. A sacrifice gives you an attachment to God in this world, which is in fact what is the world to come altogether, attachment to God. So you already transform in a certain way this world to the next world in this world itself. So this world itself becomes day. And the night of this world is secondary. But when the regular way of the world is, first comes the night, this world is this world, and then comes the next world. With that you can understand the following. Before the Torah was given, God said there's going to be 3 days preparation. He told this to Moshe Rabbeinu in the daytime of the first day. So normally you would count that as one day. The night after would be the beginning of the second day. The next night, the beginning of the third day, and the Torah should be given on the third day in the daytime. Moshe Rabbeinu added a day, and the Torah was not given on the third day, but on the fourth day. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu said, the night, I'm starting now with just the daytime. The night has to be part of this day. So normally you understand that you have to start a new day at night. But I want to say what Moshe Rabbeinu said is no. Since the Torah is now being given, night and day change. And the day no longer is night and day, but in regards to Torah, it's day and night. Therefore, the first day doesn't end till the night's over of the night after. The second day, therefore, starts in the daytime of the second day and finishes after the end of the night of the second day. The third day doesn't start till the beginning, the morning of the third day, and finishes the night. Therefore, the Torah has to be given the daytime of the fourth day after 3 full days. And the third day would have been Friday. The fourth day was Shabbos. Friday would have meant that the Torah was given within the 6 days of creation, on a Friday. Moshe Rabbeinu pushed it off. The Torah is no longer given within creation. It's already beyond creation. It's like Shabbos. And the Torah is a new world. It's the world of the world to come, in this world. It changes completely the order of the natural world and makes it a different world. Just like it renews a person, makes him a different person, it makes the world a different world too. The thinking with that, to answer a few ideas, a few questions, says that the angels wanted the Torah. And God told Moshe Rabbeinu to debate with them, argue it out with them, and whoever won the argument would get the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to the angels, you want the Torah, what does it say in the Torah? I'm the God who took you out of Egypt. You ever in Egypt? No. Doesn't apply to you. It says, keep the Shabbos. You guys work? No. Doesn't apply to you. Honor your father and mother. You have fathers and mothers? No. Don't murder. Can you murder an angel? No. None of it applies to you. What did the angels think? They wanted the Torah, and yet it's obvious. I mean, I could have given that answer too. It's obvious it doesn't apply to them. So I was thinking, the angels made the mistake into thinking that if the Torah changes them, it could change them into human beings. Torah, we're not accepting the Torah the way we are now. The way we are now, the Torah doesn't apply to us. But the Torah, like, gives us new life. Just like the Jewish people died and were resurrected, they were new people. Maybe we angels will be new angels, and we'll be able to have fathers and mothers or whatever when the Torah will accept the Torah. We'll be different people. What? So that was their mistake. Their mistake was, it can change a person, right, but it can't make you a different thing. You're a mouse, you're a mouse. It can make a person like a malach, but he's not a malach. How does it make him like a malach? Because a malach changes according to his mission. Torah changes a person according to his mission too, but it doesn't change him from being a person. He's still a person. He's the fifth level, human being plus, but he's not a human being. But the angels thought it was going to change us. It'll change us drastically to be like human beings. That much not. But to change a human being into a different kind of human being, yes, that it can do. That it does do. That was the mistake of the nations of the world, just the opposite. God said to the children of Esau. You want the Torah? They said, what's in it? So God said, he says, you can't murder. They said, we have a problem with that because we have a bracha that we live by the sword. How can we have a Torah? It says, you can't murder. Went to Yishmael. They said the same thing. What's in it? God said, you can't steal. They said, well, we have a bracha that we have our hand in everybody's pocket and they have our hand in our pocket. How can we have a Torah that says you can't steal? So God left them. What was their mistake? The mistake was that they thought they would remain the same way after the Torah was given. If they'd remain the same way, they'd have a problem. We have a Torah that says you can't murder, and we have a bracha that we live by the sword. But they didn't take in consideration if they accepted the Torah, they'd be different people. And the same thing wouldn't apply to them anymore. They wouldn't be living by the sword. They'd be a different kind of person. And then there'd be no contradiction. But they understood if we accept the Torah, things remain static. So there's a contradiction. But the mistake was that if they accepted the Torah, they wouldn't be static. They'd be different people. Different people wouldn't have the same conflict. Wouldn't exist. The bracha they had before wouldn't apply to them anymore. They're different people. What? Yeah, no, so they say that they would have also had a portion of the Torah, still it would have been given to us mainly. Or God just wanted to show us that there was no way they could have had it. They didn't understand what it was, it wasn't capable. He just wanted to go through the motions to let us know that it could only be ours. And that's why on Shavuos, hold the question till the end, we'll just get the whole idea, and then on Shavuos, it says we bring a mincha chadosh al Hashem. We bring a new mincha, new meal offering to God. Everything about Shavuos is new. It's a new creation. It's new people. It's a new world. Torah creates a new world, and especially when it comes to what makes a person a different person is basically when you eat. It says that Rabbi Yosef said that on Shavuos you have to eat a nice meal. Nice gesunte meat meal, steak meal, even though some people have a minute to eat milchiks on Shavuos. But really the halacha is you have to eat meat meal on Shavuos. He said, make me a nice steak, because if it wouldn't be for this day, there are a lot of Yosefs in the marketplace. But this day made me special. I think the idea being the following. Rabbi Yosef was saying, if it wouldn't be for the giving of the Torah, then all human beings are equal. The fourth level of existence is human beings. And all human beings are equal. The fact that the Jewish people received the Torah, they became new people. New people connected to the Torah. And as much as you're connected to the Torah, that's how much of a different person you are. So every Jew is different. Because every Jew has a different connection to the Torah. And therefore, if it had not been for this day, there would have been a lot of equal Yosefs in the marketplace. But this day makes every Yosef special. Every Yosef not the same anymore. Not the same as all those other Yosefs. Because every person now is different according to the connection he has with Torah. Makes him a different person. And that's why what you eat makes you a different person. You are what you eat. And just like the food changes everybody and makes the makeup of their body different, the Torah changes everybody and makes the makeup of their existence different. And that's why this change already occurred on the sixth day of Sivan. Even though we didn't actually receive the Torah until the seventh day of Sivan, and we celebrate Shavuos on the sixth day, but the change already took place from the time that we were ready to accept the Torah. Once we made that decision, the commitment to accept it, we became different people. And now comes the punchline of this whole thing. The changes that the Torah makes, to bring it down a little bit more to the more practical area where it's a little more understandable. Till now we've been speaking in a very nebulous, spiritual way. Let's bring it down to more concrete things. There are five ways that learning Torah and observing Torah changes a person. Now we'll get to a little bit more clarity. And I'm going to show you that those five things happened when the Torah was given. There are hints to each of these five things. And there are five customs that Ashkenazim have in regards to Shavuos. Each of these customs represents a different aspect of change that the Torah affects in a person. Let's start from the beginning. First kind of change. A person who learns Torah and observes Torah, it atones for his sins. Torah has the ability to atone for a person's sins. And that is hinted to by the fact that they died and were resurrected when the Torah was given. Because death also affects a kapara for a person when he dies and is buried. It atones for his sins. So the Jewish people died, they were resurrected, it atoned for their sins, made them different people, they didn't have the same sins anymore. What custom does this correspond to? We bring vegetables, decorate the house with flowers and branches and things like that. Where's the connection? A seed. How does a plant grow? Put a seed in the ground, and decomposes, disintegrates, and then new life comes from it. It's exactly what happened to the Jewish people when they got the Torah. They died, and as if they regenerated from that stage. It's like burying a person, it's like planting him, and then by Tchias HaMeisim he regrows like a seed, decomposes and then regrows. So that is the first idea of the change that Torah affects. It atones for a person's sins. Just like death and a new life, just like planting a seed and producing vegetation, which is the similar thing of what's it called, of that custom of decorating the house with vegetation. Second change. Aside from atoning for a person's sins, the Torah ennobles a person. It doesn't only take away the negative, it makes you more positive. It makes you a holier person. It extols you, it raises you up, right? It enhances you. As it says, Leif Tahar Bor Eliyokim, God, create for me a pure heart, the Ruach Nachon Chadesh Bekirbi, renew in me a new spirit. Torah gives you a new heart and a new spirit. Okay? You become more of a perfect person. That's hinted to by another thing that happened when the Torah was given, and that is that all the people who were handicapped were healed from their handicap. Blind people could see, and mute people could talk, and deaf people could hear, and people who had no arms grew arms and legs, and they became more perfect people. So the giving of the Torah made them more perfect. It elevated them. It ennobled them. And that is corresponds to the custom of reading Megillas Rus. Rus was a non-Jewish who had 7 mitzvahs, and by accepting the Torah, she changed herself into a Jewess with a Jewish neshama with an extra 606 mitzvahs, which is the same numerical value as Rus. Rus equals 606. Added to the 7 she originally had, that's 613. So Rus made herself into a different person by converting. So the minig of reading Rus corresponds to this concept of the change that Torah produces in a person to elevate them, perfect them. Similarly, when the Torah was given, the people became different people, more perfect people, even physically. Next thing, the Torah changes your thought processes. It makes you think differently, makes you see things differently. There's a Sma, one of the commentaries to the Shulchan Aruch, that makes the following statement, which don't be insulted when I say it, because I'll explain what it means. He says, Das Balabatim hu hepach das haTorah. What Balabatim usually think is the opposite of what the Torah thinks. Right? Some people say very, it's not smugly, but... Cynically. If you want to know what a halacha is, ask a balabas and do the opposite. Because das balabatim is, what does it mean? It means that the Torah gives you a different perspective on life. It gives you a different view of how to view things. It's a different thought process. And if you don't use the Torah's thought process with your own human thought process, you're going to distort things and see things differently. And therefore, Torah changes, and as much Torah as you learn, the more it changes your ability to see things differently. That's why somebody who is immersed in Torah totally, a Gadol b'Yisrael, we go to him for advice because his look, his perspective is completely different. His perspective is based on Torah and not on other considerations. So he, if what his perspective, what his conclusions are Torah conclusions, not conclusions based on other factors and other information. That was brought out when it says, when the Torah was given, they saw what you normally could hear, and they heard what you normally could see. The basic idea being that seeing is more clear than hearing. So they not only heard, but they saw what they heard. It was much clearer to them. And they heard what normally you could see. One of my balabatim over Shavuos told me that maybe it means the following. His name is Zelig Leisher. Say it in his name, because that's the 48th thing in acquiring the Torah that brings Geula to the world. So maybe we'll bring Mashiach with that. So he said like this. He said, seeing, you see something all at once, but you hear it piecemeal. So Torah makes you see the whole picture, and what you're hearing, you're able to hear it in a way that you see the whole picture. The opposite is also true. Sometimes you see the whole picture, but you miss the trees because of the forest. You don't realize the details. So Torah gives you the ability to hear what normally you'd see, just the whole picture, you hear every detail. At the same time that in the details you may get lost with the trees and not see the forest, you're able to see the whole picture too. Torah gives you a different perspective because it lets you see the entire picture and understand the details also at the same time. Now that corresponds to the third minute, Akdamos. Before we read the Torah Shebichtav, and we hear the same laning we hear all the time, we have a preface that speaks about our relationship to God, which basically is the Torah Shebaal Peh, which makes us hear the laning different. You appreciate even the Torah different when you have a Torah perspective, when you have a preface to how to see it properly. So that's the third. Next change. The Torah is a tavlin to the Yetzer Hara. It is it doesn't take away the Yetzer Hara, but it channels the Yetzer Hara. It spices it up. Tavlin is a spice. It makes something that's normally bland tasty. It takes the Yetzer Hara and changes the Yetzer Hatov. Instead of using it for the bad, use it for the good. There are all different kinds of Yetzer Haras. Kina, jealousy is a Yetzer Hara. But if you use it to be jealous of other people's good character traits, then it becomes good. I'm not jealous of your money, I'm jealous of your behavior. I'd like to behave like that. That's a positive thing. So the same thing that can be used for the bad can be spiced up and used for the good. The Torah changes a person's Yetzer Hara, changes his evil inclination, and makes it something good. And that's what it says when the Torah was given. It was engraven, don't read engraved, but free. Freedom was on the Luchos. We were free from the Yetzer Hara, free from the Malach HaMavis. The Malach HaMavis, the angel of death, is the same as the Yetzer Hara and the same as the Satan. The Satan, the Malach HaMavis, and the Yetzer Hara are all the same angel. So when we were free from the Malach HaMavis, we're also free from the Yetzer Hara. The Torah gives us the ability to take the Yetzer Hara and change it for the good. What was that correspond to? Eating milk products on Yontif, on Shavuos. How so? The Gemara says that milk starts out as blood, red blood, by the animal, by a woman, and it's changed into milk. So blood, which is something prohibited, the red color of blood represents sin, right? If your sins will be red, crimson, right? They'll turn into white. That's called, the milk is white. The milk is something permitted. So just like milk is blood converted into something permitted, something from the red of bad to the white of good, so too the Torah changes a person's Yetzer Hara and converts it from bad to good. So that's the custom of eating milk products, because it has this idea in it. And lastly, Torah changes your midos. It changes your character. It may not change it completely, but it ennobles it. It enables you to guide your character properly. Right? A person has a character where he's prone to shedding blood. So you can channel your character into being a moel, a butcher, or you can be a mafiosa, right? You can be a doctor. There's all different kinds of ways of channeling your character. So the Torah helps you channel your character in a proper way. And in that way, imein derech eretz, ein Torah. If you don't have the proper character traits, you can't get closer to the Torah, and you can't connect yourself and attach yourself to God. So therefore, the Torah gives us an ability to change, to channel our characters in a way that we can have a connection to the Ribono Shel Olam. And that corresponds to the concept that we said before, that Torah changes the darkness of this world, the this world aspect, and changes this world into the next world too. You can have an attachment to God in this world too, and this world becomes almost like the next world. So day comes first and then night, not night and then day. That corresponds to Tikkun Leil Shavuos. We stay up all night, Shavuos night, to transform the night into a daytime. It's like we're misakin. We correct the Leil Shavuos, the night of Shavuos, and turn it into a day. Just like the Torah changes a person's character traits where he can attach himself to God even in this world, not to wait for the next world. We can be close to God even in this world. And that's why before the Torah was given, it says, "Bayom hazeh bo midbar shel Yom." On this day, every day should be like new. Every day the Torah is new because a person is new. Every day the Torah changes the person to a different person. We accepted the Torah shebichsav, Tosa says, the written Torah. The written Torah never changes. It's set. The written Torah doesn't change. That we said, nasa v'nishma. We're going to do it, we're going to hear, but once we accepted the Torah, then there's always change. There's the oral Torah. The oral Torah is always new. Always new things that you discover in the written Torah. Written Torah doesn't change, but you can extrapolate from it, you can learn from it, and as you learn, you change, and the Torah changes. So we couldn't accept that which didn't exist yet. On that, God put the mountain over us, kegigis. A gigis is a barrel that usually contains wine. The barrel has limitations, has boundaries, okay? Everything's within the boundaries of the barrel. But when the barrel's filled with wine, the wine inside the barrel is constantly changing. It's constantly fermenting. Wine's constantly getting better. It's always changing. So that's what the Ribono Shel Olam said. You accepted the Torah as you are now, as it is now. But the Torah is not static. You change and the Torah changes. That's something that you can't accept now because it's not you. You're going to be different people tomorrow and the next day. So God took the mountain and he turned it into a wine casket. And he said, just like the wine casket has definite boundaries, but within those boundaries it's constantly changing, so too. You have to be within certain boundaries, but within those boundaries you're always changing. So I'm forcing you now, not for now, but if you won't continue to accept the Torah on an ongoing basis with all the changes that you're going to go through, and the Torah goes through, then Shom, there in the future, will be your burial. You can't live. If you're not going to adapt and change, and to the changes that the Torah makes in you, and it's a constant acceptance, then you can't exist. So Shom take for us then. So it explains, Tosu says, why did God have to force us to accept the Torah? Kof aleim hari kigigis, he put the mountain over us and threatened us. If you don't accept the Torah, there you'll be buried. We accepted the Torah. We said Nasa v'Nishma. Tosa says we accepted the Torah, the written Torah. But the oral Torah, that we needed to be forced. What I'm saying explains that. We accepted the written Torah because that was what is. Doesn't change. At that point, this is where we were, this is where the Torah was. But once we accepted it, we're going to learn it, observe it, change. We're going to bring out the Torah Sheval Peh, the oral Torah, which constantly changes the Torah and renews it and makes it new. So on that, we couldn't accept because we weren't there. It wasn't us. You can only accept what's you. So God put the mountain over us like a wine barrel, and he showed us, yeah, within the parameters is constant change. And now I'm going to affect a bond between you and the Torah for all the future, which you can't do now because it's not you. But I can do it from above, because if it's not a constant acceptance, if it doesn't go according to the change in you that's constant, then wherever you're not going to be able to be attached to the Torah, because you won't adapt to the new person that you are and the new Torah that you're connected to, then that's where you're going to be buried. Then you can't live. Torah is life, and it renews your life. And if you don't have that new life, you don't have life. That's where you'll be buried. That's what it means. So that, in my estimation, is another aspect of the whole idea of Shavuos, the whole idea of Torah, which is this constant newness, constant renewal, person constantly becoming a new person. If you accept that and you understand that and you appreciate that, then you're able to function with the Torah and function with yourself on an ongoing basis of constant growth and constant change for the good. Okay, any questions on this? Now we'll go to something else. Yes?
What did Moshe and the Jews do for that extra day to merit accepting the Torah?
Good question. What I like to say, even though it's connected to a different point, is that the main preparation for Torah was how much they longed and were anxious to receive the Torah. The more you want something, the more it's going to make an impression on you. So they counted anxiously for 49 days. But Moshe saw their longing and anxiously awaiting wasn't as much as it could be. When you're expecting something and it's delayed a long time, you get depressed and you give up hope. If it's delayed a very short time, it just magnifies your anticipation. By pushing it off one day, Moshe Rabbeinu increased their longing anticipation to a degree where now the Torah can make an impression on them, because they wanted it. That's... Otherwise, what could one day do more than... Yeah.
They died, they were resurrected, they became almost the level of angels, and a few days later, we never know.
Okay, that question I can't answer on one foot. It's an excellent question. Question was, the way we portrayed these people, they were all the way up there, and then they made a golden calf. So in order... What?
And all the other things they've got up to.
Yeah, okay. That's going to have to wait until we get to those parshios, and you have to come back then and ask me the question again, and I will devote for those parshios after Yisro, and then Kisisa, a drasha just on this. It's at least 1 week's worth, maybe 2 weeks' worth.
You talked about the four levels of mankind, of
existence.
And the Jews are at the fifth level, the level of prophecy. And they're going to become prophets. So what about Bilam?
Bilam was an aberration, was an exception to the rule, obviously. And the reason that Rabbeinu Shem gave prophecy to one goy is to show that they couldn't handle it. Because he gave him the same potential almost as a Moshe Rabbeinu, and he ended up a Bilam. So God didn't want the nations of the world to have complaints and say, if you would have made us prophets, we also would be on the same level. That's, it doesn't work like that. They were made prophets because they could handle it and because they used it properly. If I give you that same potential, you would use it the opposite way. And that was one case to show them, same answer I gave, that the Rabban Shem offered the Torah to to the Goyim, not because he thought they would accept it, but to show that they weren't capable of accepting it.
Did he become a Rasha after he got his power?
What?
Did he become a Rasha after he got all his power?
Many decent Goyim, but enough to give to him. Yeah, he was a very exalted person before that. And he used his powers in the wrong way. It's the opposite. He didn't start off a Rasha. Because of the powers he had, he became a Rasha. So it just corrupted him. Whereas our Nevi'im, most of them use the opposite. Even though they're rotten apples by us too. Okay, let me... Now something for Parshas Nasa. Get a little bit closer to where we are. Something more down to earth.